Welcome to Politics 101 with David Orr. I'm David Orr, and the podcast is brought to you by Reform for Illinois, my new home. Let me briefly explain, as many of you might have seen from our emails, that Good Government Illinois and Elisa's group, Elisa, Executive Director of Reform for Illinois, joining forces. I think that's a good idea for many groups to do. I think it gives the progressive side more power. But anyway, it means Elisa is now my friend and my boss. So we're very excited about today because there's so many crazy things in Chicago and important things, but look at reform that's being discussed, and we've got two key people on that. So we're going to be talking about the new Chicago Fair Elections Program and the legislation introduced on that, and important media coverage already taking place on that. So let me start by introducing our two guests today. First of all, Elisa Kaplan. Elisa is the Executive Director of Reform for Illinois, a nonpartisan democracy reform organization that fights for good government policies in campaign finance, ethics, and elections. She leads its election advocacy programs and recently led the successful movement to Illinois' first ranked choice voting system and its first fair elections public campaign financing program in Chicago's neighbor, that's Evanston. Elisa has been working closely with Alderman Matt Martin for the past year and a half to bring fair election small donor matching program to Chicago. And the man of the hour in many ways right now on this issue is Alderman Matt Martin. He's serving his second term as Alderman of the 47th Ward. He is also chair of a very important committee, at least in my mind, and that's Ethics and Government Oversight Committee, a lifelong progressive. Alderman Martin has been taking on some big challenges, very significant challenges, like expanding affordable housing, fully funding of schools, dealing with community violence. And he now, of course, is the main sponsor of the Chicago Fair Elections Program, which is what we're going to dig into now. So welcome, Matt. Welcome, Elisa. So Matt, let's start out with you. Okay, tell us about how you believe the legislation you've introduced will bring about equity into the process of running for office. Let's say a little more democracy for Chicago. Give us some general background there.
Mm-hmm. No, I really appreciate the question and the opportunity to talk about this important initiative. So I believe so strongly, as do so many people across Chicago and our entire country, that our campaign finance system is broken, that too often it requires candidates to rely disproportionately on a very small handful of big, wealthy, special interest donors to fund their campaigns, and that there are so many better ways to do this. And we don't have to look too far, because this isn't novel. You can look out east to New York and Washington, D.C. You can look just a little bit to the west of us in Denver, and then to the far west to San Francisco, L.A., and Portland, to see that there's a better way to do this, that we can join those cities in passing our own fair elections legislation. We're, in fact, the biggest city in the U.S. that doesn't have a program like this, and that when we pass it, the end goal is that we're amplifying the voices of everyday Chicagoans, that we're making sure that at the end of the day, elected officials, in this case, our proposal centers around city council, are most accountable to the people who put them in the office and not that small number of wealthy special interests.
Well, I like the sound of that. Elisa, you've been pushing this idea for a long time as well. Anything to add about the move and how this is allowing, we believe, strongly believe, that it adds more democracy. It gets more people into the process of possibly being elected, being, for example, Chicago aldermen or alderwomen. But it also means that maybe some of the issues that we know, like in the national level, you know, there's a majority of people that want these things, like some sort of gun legislation, reproductive protection rights, and so forth. And yet, because of the nature of our Congress and whatever, we're not getting that. And it has a lot to do with the campaign finance. So what would you add to that? Add to what Matt has said about how important this is in building a democracy.
Well, it's very simple. in most of the country, but especially in Chicago, the amount of money that comes from small donors, from everyday people, is very, very small. So in various analyses that Reform for Illinois has done, we found in one case that 3% of the money in Illinois elections comes from small donors. In the last mayoral race, we found that it was more like 1%. For aldermanic elections, it's a little better, but not much. We're still in the kind of lower single digits. And so everyday people are just not having the impact on campaigns, on the candidates that they would support. They don't have the resources to have that impact and have that voice in who gets elected. So this program, and we've seen it in other jurisdictions, as Alderman Martin said, we've got a lot of data on how it works. In New York, for example, they found that their small donor matching program increased donor participation in minority communities by as much as 24 times. So that's people who otherwise might feel that they wouldn't be able to have an impact with their small donation, now feeling that they really can have that voice because of the small donor matching system. And when those people who have the greatest needs have that voice, they can get policies, they can get representatives that actually represent them, and they can get policies that actually address their needs.
Excellent. Both of you, but we'll start with Matt, another general question for a moment. We know that strong backers around the country of the democratic process have been faced with strict regulations on campaign finance because of the court. One nice thing about the direction you're taking is it's clearly legal. Okay, this can be done, is being done, which means the possibilities of success are pretty exciting. So tell us about how this has been used in other cities and what strengths or weaknesses you've discovered that could apply to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Matt? So the vast majority of cities do what we're proposing, which is a small dollar donor matching program. I'll get to the one exception in just a minute. So what they do is they put in place an upper limit above which a match won't happen, and sometimes above which a contribution just can't be made in excess of. And so say in our situation, we're proposing that a match be for $150 and lower, and then for actually $25 and lower, the match be even higher. But let's focus on, say, someone's contributing $100. We're proposing that gets matched 9-1. So that $100 essentially becomes $1,000, and that can really incentivize someone to hold house parties, go door to door, talking with people who too often haven't been engaged in our political processes, particularly at the aldermanic levels. We're starting off with a 9-1 match because that's similar to, I think, DC, if memory serves, they're at 9-1. I know New York for a fact is at 8-1. And in talking with the other cities, one of the things we heard uniformly was start bigger. New York started in 1989, I believe it was 1-1, and then they gradually increased all the way to 8-1. So they said, hey, if you really want to amplify the voices of everyday Chicagoans or everyday community members, whichever city you're talking about, start big. And so that's what's in our proposal. But it's not just about the match. It's also like good government democracy building efforts too. We say if you opt into this program and you meet the thresholds, that you have to participate in at least two nonpartisan debates. And there's also more rigorous reporting than what's currently involved concerning transparency of donor disclosures. And at the end of the day, really what we want to do is strengthen people's faith in our local democracy. The one exception in terms of cities that haven't done a small dollar donor match is Seattle. They instead do what are called a democracy voucher program, where each voter gets to decide which candidate or collection of candidates can get a democracy voucher that they can redeem. We feel that there are some real benefits with that program, but ultimately wanted to do the match. One, because so many other jurisdictions have done it. And two, this actually isn't a new proposal in city council. This dates back to 2015 and 2016, where there was broad support across City Council, as well as the public. I think we had a non-binding referendum put to voters just a few months before introduction in 2015. Nearly 4 in 5 voters said, we want to get to a small dollar donor matching program. So we felt that for those reasons, among others, that it would be good to keep that proposal in place, build upon that, and introduce that, which we did last week.
I want to emphasize here and build a little on what Alderman Martin said about how well this particular ordinance that has been introduced in City Council incorporates a lot of best practices that we've gleaned over time from all the jurisdictions that have been doing this for many years. As Alderman Martin said, the high match for low dollar donations, that really empowers people who wouldn't otherwise have the resources to give a meaningful donation to their favorite candidate. That really empowers them to have that voice. This program also includes a block grant to help people get their campaigns off the ground. That's something that Washington, D.C. did recently. There's all sorts of features of this ordinance that were very thoughtfully considered and incorporated to make sure that it incorporated all the lessons that we've learned around the country.
I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm anxious to see what you think about. Before I get into how much support there's there, let me ask either one of you, okay? The battles often small donor matching or Seattle's programs that often come down of public dollars and how they're wisely used, okay? So what is the case we're gonna make when opponents may bring the question of, well, wait a second, you know, we can't afford this because we're not blah, blah, blah. So what is the case there of why it's important to use public dollars? Both of you just recently been making the case, because you're saying other reforms are happening. That's clear, demonstrates how you can bring about more democracy by doing this program. But what else? What can you make the case of why this money is being wisely spent in doing this program?
Elisa, do you want to start off?
Yeah, sure. Well, many of these programs that have been adopted elsewhere were initially adopted to fight corruption and pay-to-play politics. That's why New York City originally adopted the program in the wake of a number of campaign finance-related corruption scandals. And I think there was a New York State commission that several years ago recommended that New York State adopt one of these programs. And they really put it well. They said that the corruption-fighting nature of these programs could save a ton of money in the long run. And they said that these programs are so relatively inexpensive. If they prevent one extravagant spending program from happening, then it could pay for the whole program. So just one pay to play, you know, one kind of pork barrel favor that was done to a big donor, that would take care of funding the whole program. So the question is really, considering we have significant evidence of the cost of corruption in Chicago, you know, not can we afford to do this, but can we afford not to do this? It's one of the most cost-effective reforms we can take to save those all of that spending on corruption-related programs.
I can't help but thinking, if we knew years ago what we knew now about Ed Burke, and particularly the way in which he handled the the compensation program as chairman of the Finance Committee, you could have paid for many decades of this program with the money that was lost in that case. Matt, let me take it in a slightly different direction for a moment. In my experience, and I'm sure you're soon to be, and you know this as well, Elisa, but ethics legislation or accountability issues are often the hardest to pass. When we passed the first major city ethics legislation back around 87, we had the strong support of Harold Washington. And as the chief sponsor, I really didn't have the votes. But Marilyn Washington, we had the votes, period. That leads me to be asking, where is the Johnson administration going to be or is that a negotiating point at this point? Because in today's council, you know better than me now how tough a challenge this is. But so where do we stand with the administration at the moment?
Mm-hmm. During the campaign, the mayor, along with many other city council members who ultimately won that race, filled out Reform for Illinois' questionnaire declaring their support for a program like this. And as recently as last Wednesday, he reiterated his support for a publicly financed elections program. So publicly, you have the leader of the fifth floor saying that broad principles, he's supportive of this, and in fact was open to seeing it expanded to other city office holders. So that's a good place to be when it comes to an introduction. But to your point, David, we got to make sure that we're engaging not just the administration, but council members in a really thoughtful and direct way to say, this is why we think that this is a sound investment. This is something that has broad support here. It's been done well. And to my knowledge, no other city has looked to repeal or water down their publicly financed election programs. In fact, all of them, if they've done anything, has worked to expand and strengthen them. So I think we have so many experiences in other parts of the country that provide a North Star for us in terms of where we want to go. When we looked at 2015 and 2016, the last time City Council took this up, it had broad support across many different parts of the city. You had one of the lead sponsors, if not the lead sponsor, Michelle Harris, represents the South Side, did then, continues to, and then two former Alder people on the North and Northwest sides. And so we have more recently said we really want to focus on showing that there's grassroots support. So over 20 organizations who have deep ties in their community, predominantly Black parts of the city, Latino, Asian American, and white, are all supporting this. It includes Reform for Illinois, Asian American Midwest Progressives, People's Lobby, Worker Center for Racial Justice. So we have a good place to start, but it's not anything I take for granted. We know that we have to build and build quickly.
Okay, at least let me follow up what Matt was talking about, because that's your stick as well, and that is, tell us about the significant support. Matt has just mentioned a number of this about community supporters. Okay, there's been a coalition of you all working for a while, making significant strides. What can you tell us about strategy, or to expand on what Matt just said, what strategies or what major challenges do you feel like you face in the coming electoral battle or political battle to win enough votes to actually pass this?
Well, this has been one of the best experiences I've had working with coalition partners. And I think the reason is that all of our partners and many organizations around the state really understand the problem. Whether they're, you know, an organization like Worker Center for Justice or the Sierra Club or the Illinois Environmental Council that also supported us, communities that focus on a range of different issues, they understand that money in politics affects their priorities. They understand that they can't get the housing that the community needs if big developers are drowning out the voices of everyday Chicagoans. They understand the impact on the environment if big polluters are giving giant donations to elected officials. They understand just how intertwined our missions are and how important this is. So people have been really motivated to get working on this. They've put a ton of time and effort into it. It's been really a terrific experience working with them. Going forward, we plan to continue growing our coalition. We're still talking to stakeholders and to organizations around the city. And we're just going to make sure that every elected official in the city knows how committed we are to this and how important it is to us.
Okay. Matt, one of, you know, a key organization in Chicago, certainly reform organization, is the BGA, the Better Government Association. And I believe Cranes recently ran an article based on their reactions and suggestions. I assume you know what I'm talking about here, but do you believe some of those suggestions that the BGA is making can be, you know, wisely added in this legislation, or is it too early to say?
I don't think we want to rule anything out at this point. What we started with was a very dedicated working group with members from all different backgrounds who had lots of wonderful ideas. This is a real synthesis of those conversations and ideas. But we got to expand the pie, as Lisa said. So I know Mayor Johnson, among others, recommended, well, what if we want to expand this to other office holders? Or what if we want to tinker with particular limits, things that other organizations had suggested? What we're committed to doing is setting this up for 2027 so that it's going to be successful right out of the gates. That's a big reason why we wanted to start with a proposal that's focused on city council members. But if we feel that we can set a program up successfully that has other components, then terrific. Because at the end of the day, we just want to make sure that we're setting something up that people have faith in that's going to help address this crisis and confidence that people have in city government. So anyone who's listening, please don't hesitate to let my office know, the committee in particular, as well as all of our partners, what we can do to improve this legislation.
Okay. And one more question just for you briefly, because it's come up indirectly. Why did you choose to focus on aldermen or city council at this point? Is it for the reasons you just mentioned, you got elections coming up, or are you trying to be just a little careful? If you take on the mayor, the city clerk, city treasurer, it takes a lot more executive, you know, follow through, et cetera. Was there any particular reason that you focused on the aldermen this time?
I think it's because we know that there are a number of uncontested races or non-contested races or non-competitive races that come up from time to time. And so wanting to be mindful of walking before you can run, we felt that we had lots of good experiences, good conversations with other jurisdictions that said, okay, if we want to start in a modest place that's still effective, that ultimately was a good starting point. We know from the mayor's races, for example, that I think every year since perhaps 2011, the caps have been busted. And so I think that we want to have continued conversations in terms of what this program would mean for a citywide office holder, whether it's the mayor, the clerk, or the treasurer. We want to continue having those conversations. So we certainly didn't introduce this with the idea that we're ruling out something that's citywide, but we felt that based on conversations that we had internally and with partners across the country, that this would be a responsible proposal to start with if it was implemented largely on its face. But that, as you know, David, the running for mayor is a unique thing relative to other city office holders. So you'll want to walk before you can run. But if someone has a series of great ideas about how we can ensure that this can be implemented for other city office holders, let's have that be a part of the conversation in coming weeks and months.
Just a quick thing, just in case not everyone understands that. When you say that the caps were busted, for example, in mayoral races, can you just explain that briefly?
Absolutely. So there are generally contribution limits, even if they're higher than one might think, to any campaign for city office, whether it's the mayor, city council, clerk, treasurer, police district council members. If you self-fund, there's a point above which you bust the caps and essentially say, anyone can contribute an unlimited amount of money, whether it's you as a self-funded candidate, as we saw with Dr. Willie Wilson, or particular individuals or PACs. So I believe Mayor Emanuel had done that in two cycles. Willie Wilson had done that in the two most recent mayoral cycles at the initial round, and then Paul Ballas broke the caps, meaning that individuals and organizations could contribute unlimited sums of money in theory. That very rarely happens at the aldermanic level. So again, if you're starting with the proposal that assumes and incentivizes people to opt in, we felt that recent experiences in 2023 and 2019 would yield good results for city council members in particular moving forward.
Good, thank you. You know, before we run out of time, I wanna touch briefly on two other issues, okay, that are big, I assume, or hopefully will be going to your committee at some point. There could be some fascinating battles coming up in the next couple of years. Let me ask Elisa first on one of them. And that is, as you know, we have laws in both Chicago and Cook County having to do with contractors who have contracts with the city can give a limited amount of dollars. Right now, it's $1,500 in both the city and the county. And the idea is simply to try and same thing. We're trying to limit the pressure the local business person, the contractor, feels like he's got to give back, particularly in a pay-to-play place like Chicago's history has unfortunately shown us. So the question is, do you have any thoughts? And then I've got one for you, Matt, right after that. But Elisa, particularly this idea, many of the good things that we passed in the past, people have found ways to kind of drive a truck through them. So the $1,500 limit is a good thing. It doesn't lead to nearly as much intimidation as could be. But what we're finding now is that the company gives $1,500 and the three-year-old baby gives, $1,500 or more. Anyway, it's being abused. We know it's being abused. And unfortunately, lots of mayoral candidates and mayors actually benefit from it, as well as aldermen and people in the county as well. So do you have any thoughts on that, Elisa? Is that something that we hope is going to see some reform in the coming days?
I hope so. I believe that closing that loophole of allowing executives and their families to donate to candidates, even if their companies are doing business with the city, I believe that was included in Alderman Martin's ethics package that has been stalled, but will hopefully be revived shortly and get passed because it's really important, as you mentioned. Other cities have solved this problem. This isn't reinventing the wheel. This is an easy thing to solve. There's clearly been abuse of the system by candidates who accept these donations and by the companies that whose executives have been donated. So it's a simple fix. Just bar executives and their families from donating. It's in Alderman Martin's bill. We should do it.
And let me go back to Matt. Is that in the bill we're talking about? Is that the lobbyist bill or is that in this bill?
That's a separate bill. So there's a third bill, one that we introduced a number of months ago that includes a number of recommendations from the Board of Ethics. So one thing that they do after every campaign cycle is look back at the past practices and see what policy changes could improve how campaigns are run in Chicago. This time they proposed about a half dozen different ideas. We incorporated most of them into a proposal earlier this year that was making some good progress. And then the Johnson administration pulled their support from it. I know that the mayor had some things to say about that proposal last week. And I hope that it's something where ultimately we get constructive feedback from that office so that we can find a way to move forward with a number of common sense reforms to how people raise money in Chicago.
Is the latest one you're referring to the lobbyist, what we call the lobbyist registry? Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Well, and that's gotten a lot of coverage too. So thank you for just going a little broader perspective for a moment. Let me ask both of you if you have some final words on the subject here at hand, the Chicago Fair Elections program. One little thing I wonder is how quickly we might be getting out of rules so there can be some hearings. Of course, people would always have hearings that aren't official. It's, nothing says you can't have a hearing even if you don't have the legislation right in front of you. But so what about that? Last words, Matt and Elisa?
Yeah, I'm at the end of the day, not concerned about the committee that this starts in, more concerned about how we get to a place where the full city council, all 50 members, will be comfortable supporting this important proposal. As both of you know, the rules committee is a committee of the whole. That means that all 50 members of city council are in there. So the plan was always to engage all 50 city council members or my 49 other colleagues. That plan hasn't changed. And so whether it starts off in the rules committee or the ethics committee, our path forward looks essentially identical.
Okay. And you, how confident are you that we're going to be making some progress in the near future?
When we have over 20 organizations, grassroots organizations from across the city, declaring that they support this proposal that every other big city in the country has, we're in a great place. When you have the mayor come out last week and say that he supports a publicly financed elections program, that's a good place to start. As you mentioned earlier, I know that this is going to be a hard-fought victory, because any legislation worth passing typically isn't something that happens easily. So we're going to work very hard as a coalition of supporters to get this done. We know that it has the support of broad swaths of the city. So we just got to navigate the sausage making that is city government.
Great. And last words, Elisa?
Yeah, this is one of the single most effective and transformative reforms that the city could adopt. It's really about bringing power, political power, back where it belongs to the people. It's about empowering those everyday Chicagoans who couldn't afford a big donation to have a voice in their political system. It's empowering candidates who may not be personally wealthy or well-connected to run a competitive campaign and represent people who otherwise might not be represented. This is just a really powerful way to strengthen our democracy in Chicago. Clearly, most of Chicago understands that because 4 out of 5 voted for it back in 2015. Clearly, it has the support of a broad spectrum of community organizations. We're ready to get this done, and it's long past time that we do it.
Okay, well, you convinced me. So I want to thank Elisa Kaplan, and I want to thank Chairman Martin, both for what you said today, I think, in helping us understand it in more detail, and for the commitment you've made now for several years to bring this kind of legislation before us. And with that, thank you very much, Matt. Thank you very much, Elisa.
Thanks for having us.
On that note, this concludes this episode. You can find this episode and other episodes of Politics 101 with David Orr on RSS.com, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. So please tune in for, past episodes and any episodes that are coming up.